Today, I'd like to spend time talking with you about the two fundamental moral visions, the two fundamental moral visions that are really the most viable options for us in the context of the culture that we live in. The moral visions, and I apologize to some of the men and women who were in my class just a few minutes ago. I'm going to be touching on some of the same subjects. But the two fundamental moral visions are the secular moral vision and the Christian moral vision. Now, what is, just in the basics, a moral vision? Moral vision is just a set of basic principles that you have faith in. The principles that guide the choices that you make while you're living in this world. We as human beings are really the only animals that make choices and that have the ability to choose freely. And we can consider the reasons for our choices. Other animals act on instinct. Even though we have some instincts, we are the only animal that has the ability to choose an action over another fairly freely. And like I said, the two are, and there are several moral visions and in the world. For example, you could have a moral vision as a Buddhist or in Islam or some other ideologies could be a moral vision. But really, for us here, to be practical, the two main moral visions that are in competition are, like I said, the Christian moral vision and the secular moral vision. The reason I'm talking about this today is chiefly because of a sentence that Paul uses in the second reading. Paul makes a statement that our bodies do not belong to us. And when you hear that statement, that your body does not belong to you, it is part of a moral vision, which is specifically Christian. Because the secular moral vision, as they put it in bumper stickers, basically says, my body, my choice. Which is a way of saying what the secular moral vision is all about. And furthermore, I find it interesting that even the first reading with Samuel being called and the gospel reading are all about really a call, that you are receiving a call from someone who is greater than yourself, meaning God, and that you are being called to live a life that is not your own. You're being called to live a life in response to what in theology we call a vocation, a call, which means that your own decisions are not just your own to make. You are part of the freedom to choose, but part of the freedom to choose is in your relationship. The closest thing I give you is, when a person is in a significant relationship, like a marriage or like a best friendship or something like that, and we're a business partnership. When a person has to make a decision, they always say, let me check with. And you check with your partner, your spouse, because you understand that even though you have freedom, you're not alone. You are living in communion. That's a very important statement. You are living in communion. Now, we're usually, in the Catholic tradition, so focused on receiving communion that we forget that the whole point of receiving communion is to remind you that you are living in communion. That's what it means to receive communion. You are living in communion, common union. You're not living just on your own. You're living in common union with Christ. And that is the fundamental basis of a Christian life. That it is not a life, even if you're single, it is not a life that is lived on your own. There's always a call there from God. During these past few weeks, in the teaching that I do right before this Mass, I teach juniors and seniors. And we've been talking about Christian morality, which really is a consequence of living in common union with God, with Christ. We live in common union, therefore we notice several things and we seek to discover the principles that guide us in making the moral choices that we are called to make. And one of the things that I've been trying to teach in that class is the whole concept of the different kinds of law that there are. Because the different kinds of law that there are, law helps us to be guided towards happiness. All good law helps us to live together. I never stray very far from the great philosopher Aristotle, who would always say that the definition of politics is the answer to just one question. How ought we to live together? And we have to live together. We live in cities, and even when you don't, you live with neighbors, you live in family. And the question of law is, how do you discover what is good? Because that's what law is supposed to be. A guide to your own personal good, and to the good of the society that you live in. And for the Christian, the law comes in three different, and this is something I wanted, I think every Catholic should understand. And I just taught this. For a Christian, there are three kinds of law. Number one, and I'll say them in going from the least important to the most important. And that is, number one, which is positive law. Now, what is positive law? Positive law doesn't mean a law that is positive as opposed to negative. It's a law that has been posited by some governmental or authority. For example, in your home, you have positive law. You shall not go watch television until the dishes are done. That is a positive law. It was not given by God, and it is not part of nature. But it is nonetheless a law that you have posited for the running of the family. Governments give law, and laws are supposed to be for our benefit. You shall stop on a red light. You shall drive on the right side of the road. If you go to England, there is a different law. You're driving the left side of the road. So there's positive law. The second kind of law, and this is very important, is called natural law. And natural law is the law that is embedded in nature. That somehow there are things that are embedded in nature, and no matter how you choose not to see them, they still apply. For example, the example I gave a couple of weeks ago when I talked about this in my class was, you know, if you have a seed and you want, or somebody gives you some seeds, and you want to do what is good for the seed, you don't have the option of doing whatever you want. The seed comes pre-programmed. And so you have to discover what the pre-programming that somebody put into that seed in order for it to do what is good for that seed. So you know that the seed, we know a seed has to be planted in ground, has to be planted in fertile ground, has to be watered, it has to receive proper amount of sunlight, and all these conditions for a seed to do what it's supposed to do. You didn't decide that. The seed came pre-programmed. And all the way from there, all the way up to the example that I think is mostly the most clear is the example of post-war Nazi Germany, when they had what's called the Nuremberg trials. And the Nuremberg trials, of course, were the trials of the Nazi SS officers especially, who basically had killed millions of people. And they were claiming that they had done nothing wrong, that all they were doing is obeying orders. And from one perspective, they're correct. Because if you classify a crime to be a violation of a positive law, the law of a government, then they had committed no crime because it was legal for the SS to kill Jews during the reign of Hitler. And so they were saying we were doing something legal and we were also under orders. So we did not violate any American law. We did not violate any French law, any English or Russian law. We did what was totally legal. And yet, there is something in the human heart and in the human conscience that says that killing millions and millions of innocent people is inherently wrong. And that no matter what government makes a law, and the law says it is okay to kill innocent people, that law is invalid. And it must be disobeyed. Tomorrow we are going to be celebrating the Martin Luther King Memorial. And Martin Luther King was famous for saying that laws which applied about segregation were unjust laws. They were laws that negated a natural law that was understood by common sense. And in reality, it was understood by common sense, even in the Declaration of Independence, where it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident. That's a natural law, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with natural rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so what the humanity post-World War II said, it doesn't matter how many laws people passed saying that killing Jews was okay, it's wrong. And they actually had to come up with another name because they didn't want to use the name natural law. And so what they did is they came up with something called crimes against humanity, which was made up. Not made up in the fact that it didn't exist. It was not part of German positive law. Okay. And so, but it was a reflection of the natural law. And then the last kind of law, and the most, well, not the most important, but one of the most important, is divine law. Law that is given to us by God and is made known to us through revelation. And that is something that we must obey, but it's not obvious. For example, keep holy the Sabbath day is a divine law. But you would not say that it's part of nature or part of any government laws. Now, why am I getting into this? Because the very notion of what you hear in the readings today, first saying your body is not your own. Okay, so it doesn't belong to me. That's what St. Paul says. So who does it belong to? Well, it belongs to God. We understand that we have come to know the revelation of who God is through Jesus Christ. He revealed the Father to us. Remember, before Jesus, the whole notion of calling God our Father was not necessarily and is not necessarily part of the Jewish faith. It was a revelation. But revelation, even though Jesus gave it to us, it starts there that we have to look up and say, speak, Lord. Your servant is listening. But when we listen, does that mean that everything is going to be revealed, for example, as a lot of people tend to think, in the Bible, for example? I can't tell you how many times people come up to me and say, where in the Bible does it say that? And then dot, 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 dot. Put in what you'd like to know. Now, notice what's happening there. What's happening there is that what the person is saying is, the only law that I recognize as coming from God is a law that has been given as divine law, meaning revealed in the Bible. Well, there are a lot of laws that are from God that are not revealed in the Bible. There are laws that are inherent in nature. The example that I like to use, for example, is the Bible. For example, doesn't say anywhere that abortion is wrong. It says murder is wrong, but if you say, no, that's not a human being, you can say, well, then, where in the Bible, show me in the Bible where it says, thou shalt not commit abortion. Well, it's not there. It's not there. Why isn't it there? Because we as a Christian community understand that there's also natural law. And what is natural law? Well, that means that it is written in the human heart and in the human conscience that we should not kill innocent beings. From the moment a person is conceived, forget about whether they are persons or not, that's not the issue. There's all kinds of, you know, debate as to, well, when does it become a person or not? They're human. And whenever they're human, we cannot kill innocent human beings. That's why that whole Nuremberg thing was brought up. Because there's a society issue. But the issue of, well, is it a person or not? Because some people say, well, what is a person? Well, you have to be conscious and able to respond. So a person who is unconscious then falls under the non-person, and you can kill them. Well, of course not. So our respect is for human beings. But when people say, where in the Bible does it say, and then they expect everything to be said in the Bible, they're neglecting the fact that God built the world and he built us in his image and likeness, and that there are things that are written in the human heart. Now, divine law, the law that is told to us in the Bible, complements what is written in the human heart, what is written in the structure of creation. For example, nowhere in the Bible does it talk about ecology and care of the earth. It says some beautiful things about the earth, but it doesn't say anything about ecology. It doesn't say anything about medical ethics. It doesn't say anything about a whole bunch of stuff. And so when you immediately go, where in the Bible does it say, what you're saying is, the only source of law that I recognize to guide me is divine law, that which the Bible says. And that's wrong, because God built the world with an internal structure. And for us to do what is good means that we have to discover the structure of the way that God built the world and make our moral decisions to follow the structure that God built into the world. That is, for example, the other issue that a lot of times is getting a lot of press these days, and that is the Catholic Church's attitude towards homosexuality. Please understand, because yesterday I had a gentleman, and I was talking about this, and evidently I didn't stress enough that God loves homosexuals. Because this gentleman came up to me and said, Father, any homosexual that was present in the congregation yesterday must not have felt very loved. And I'm going, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, because when God sees a human being, he doesn't see, straight, gay, bisexual, that's us. When God sees a human being, he says, my son, my daughter. That's the primary category that God views human beings. Now, whether a person's sexual preference or something like that, whether that is for and against the structure of the world, that's not to say that God doesn't love them. And if for example, if your child is doing something that is bad for him, you say, don't do that because it's bad for you. And if your child says, well, that means you don't love me. No, it doesn't mean you don't love me. It means that according to the structure of your body, that is not to be engaged in. And that's what, that's the way that we have to understand natural law. That's, by the way, you know, right now the Supreme Court is about to take on the whole issue, of gay marriage for the entire nation. Now, you're about to see the possibility that if the Supreme Court says gay marriage is fine for the entire nation, the Catholic Church will say, no, it's not fine. We're not saying we hate homosexuals. We're saying marriage has a particular structure that was created by God at the beginning. We're not denying the fact that love can be experienced between two people of the same sex. Love can be experienced between anybody. But what we're saying is the structure of marriage was created by God. And Jesus is very plain. In the beginning, God created the male and female. Therefore, what God has united, no man may divide. And so we are guided not by the positive law of the Supreme Court. We are guided by the law of God reflected in natural law and in divine law. See why it's important that we understand, because otherwise you're going to fall into, it's a particularly kind of Protestant thing of where in the Bible does it say that? Not all Protestants. So it's important that you understand that for you as a Catholic, for you as a Christian, you have a moral vision that is greater than the secular moral vision. In the secular moral vision, there is no God. No God is, you don't have, in the secular moral vision, Samuel is having hallucinations. Okay, that's what's happening to Samuel. The moment he says, speak, Lord, your servant is listening, he's wacko. Okay, because there is no God. In the secular moral vision, you own yourself. You do whatever the hell you want to do with your own body, with your own property. You know, even for a Christian, we're not allowed to do whatever we want with our property. That's what the whole issue of stewardship is all about. We are entrusted with property. And we have to do what is good for us and for others. And we have a responsibility. We don't just get to do whatever we want. Now, in a secular vision, there is nothing outside of humanity. And so humanity, and you as a human being, as an individual, in this context of the United States, can do whatever you want to do. And so what I'm trying to get you to see is the two different moral visions, the secular moral vision, and trust me, folks, we live steeped into the secular moral vision. Every time, I find it amazing, every time I turn on the television, it's amazing how secular the moral vision of TV programs are. Especially, I find them, especially in comedies, you know, like, it's amazing, you know, I enjoy, you know, TV shows, you know, like The Big Bang Theory, or I enjoy a couple of other comedy shows. But it's amazing how people are just kind of hopping from bed to bed to bed to bed, having sex with all kinds of people. And people are going, ha, 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 isn't that funny? I'm going, nobody, there's no moral vision. There's no sense of relationship. There's no sense of reality. I don't think I've ever seen, you know, anybody in a comedy say, oh God, I got a venereal disease as a result of having gone to bed with 10 people in the last month. And so the secular moral vision is, you know, I said it today in class. The secular moral vision, there's one word that goes for the secular moral vision. Whatever. It's whatever. You know, and the Christian moral vision is, we have been created in the image and likeness of God. And our lives are not our own. We have a responsibility. And our responsibility, we listen to God communicating with us. He communicates through us through the scriptures. He communicates through us to us through the church teaching. He communicates to us through the natural law. And insofar as it is correct, he communicates for the common good through government and family structures. But those are not necessarily guaranteed. And so it's important for us because I you know, the way that society is going and the way government is going, I see Christianity moving in this direction and I see secular government moving in this direction. And I think the disconnect between the two spheres, the two moral visions, are going to become more and more apparent the longer we go. And I think it'll become more and more uncomfortable for people who are serious about their faith. So it's important that we understand what we're up against. And if you're going to be a Christian, it really means studying the moral vision that Jesus gave us. Studying the divine law, studying natural law, and studying insofar as it's in tune, the government positive law. Because we are called beyond just what our secular brothers and sisters are called. But they're not even called. They do whatever they want. So, God bless. Thanks for listening.